Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
I'm Stephanie Curtis.
And I'm Ewan Kerr. Together, we are the Cube Critics.
With Thanksgiving coming up, that means two things.
First of all, we've got to prepare the meal.
Second of all, you've got to watch some movies.
Yes, indeed. Film and family tradition. There are a lot of big movies opening and a lot of time to kill with your family. We have recommendations for you and yours, and we want to hear from you, too.
We want to know what you think would make perfect family viewing across the generations. And we aren't looking for just kid films here. We want you to call in with your favorites and share memories of watching movies with your relatives. What movie pleased both the kids and the grandparents?
So run to your phone, call 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. You can also leave a story or movie suggestion at nprnews.org/live. Later in the hour, we'll talk with Barry Jenkins, writer and director of the must-see indie movie Moonlight. But first, let's talk about the big movies opening this week.
What makes Albus Dumbledore so fond of you?
I really couldn't say.
So setting a pack of dangerous creatures loose here was just another accident. Is that right?
What would I do deliberately?
To expose wizard kind. Provoke war between the magical and non-magical worlds.
Mass slaughter for the greater good, you mean?
Serious, serious stuff. Stephanie, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
That's right.
You saw it. What did you think?
I really, really liked it. This is the new movie set in the Harry Potter world. If you didn't guess from that Dumbledore reference in that clip, that was Eddie Redmayne talking to Colin Farrell, two of the stars of the film. And this is set before Harry Potter is born. It is set in New York City of, you know, the 1920s, and not the real New York City, because there are wizards in America, Ewan, and the wizards are hiding from the nomadges, as they call muggles in America. And Eddie Redmayne arrives. He's an English wizard, and he has an incredible suitcase, a very delightful suitcase filled with magical creatures. And he does not do a very good job of keeping track of his suitcase. And the magical...
He seems a little absent-minded.
He's a little absent-minded, and the magical creatures get out. And that's... So the plot of the movie isn't that complicated. It's basically a MacGuffin movie where people are running after something. In this case, Eddie Redmayne, playing Newt, is looking to find the magical creatures, and he's got some compatriots. He's got a nomad, Kowalski, and he's got another wizard who is an American wizard named that's played by Catherine Waterston, and they are trying to round up the creatures. And the creatures aren't going. This isn't about the creatures tearing apart everything. The creatures are really lovely creatures. But this
the clip I saw, that he's one of them is a kleptomaniac.
Yes, a kleptomaniac, an adorable kleptomaniac. It's a little platypus-like thing that keeps trying to steal diamonds, and it's very funny. So there are delightful creatures, but it is also, like, remember the first Harry Potter films were a little bit more childlike, and
yes,
as the war between the good and evil ensued, they got pretty dark. This movie marries that delightfulness with the darkness right away. And this is the first in a series of five films, and you definitely can feel that because there's a lot of table setting, as they say, where you're learning who the people are and what the stakes are and why the wizards are hiding and why the nomadges, you know, don't see the wizards or see the magic. But it is a satisfying film. It is going to be a great series, and I really loved it. And the special effects are absolutely gorgeous. So it's not a deep film, and I didn't care.
We should talk very quickly. There's a whole bunch of stuff, actually.
Yeah, there is.
Up.
But so you have to choose something to
okay.
talk about. You can't talk about everything.
Okay. I'm going to mention two. First
okay.
of all, Loving, mm-hmm. which is the new movie about the just tragic case of Rich and Mildred Loving, who were prosecuted by the state of Virginia in the 1960s because they were married. He is white. She or he was white. She was black. And it's just a heart-rending tale, beautifully told. And this has Joel Edgerton playing the man, Ruth Negga playing the woman. And you just get to watch the horrors that they went through. This is just a remarkably moving piece of film, which just shows that they were quite people who, quite naive in some ways. I mean, at one point they're asked if they want to be in Life magazine. And they said, oh, sure, sent round a photographer, not knowing that this is just going to change their world.
Not it's realizing quite, what publicity can do to a person's
an astonishing,
life.
An astonishing piece. Another documentary that is opening this weekend, too, is The Eagle Huntress.
Oh, I want to see that.
Which is this spectacular film showing this young woman in Mongolia who is breaking centuries, millennia of tradition by becoming a hunter with a golden eagle on her
arm. That's what I want to do when I grow up, Ewan.
And, I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, these birds weigh 16 pounds, and they're out there. They're actually on their horses, and they have to have these special kind of crutches on their saddles to hold up the birds because they're so heavy. It's one of these films where you kind of wonder, how did they shoot that? Because they have the shots are so perfect. I got a little obsessed with this, but it's also kind of rote, actually. I mean, it's a wonderful story about female empowerment, but you know what's going to happen, basically, all the way through. But you just bathe in this glorious, glorious stuff.
So, I can't wait to see that.
So, lots of good movies
yep.
out there. So, this is the point where we transition. And
that's a very smooth transition. Nicely done.
Yes. And we want to hear from you about your Thanksgiving family traditions.
1-800-227-6000 or 242. Now, let me get that again.
Yeah.
651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828.
Let's play a little clip, shall we? See if you can guess which this one is.
This is what turned him into a demon. There is evil at work in the land to the west, Prince Ashitaka. It's your fate to go there and see what you can see with eyes unclouded by hate. You may find a way to lift the curse, you understand?
Yes.
There are angry ghosts all around us, dead from wars, sickness, starvation, and nobody cares.
That is a clip from one of my picks for a great family film, Princess Mononoke, the Miyazaki movie, which came out several years ago. What is yours? Call us now at 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828, or you can go to our blog at nprnews.org/live.
Ewan, what is about Princess Mononoke that makes you think it plays well across the generations?
This is one of these movies that really has something for everyone. It's the story of a quest, trying to discover what is bringing out demons to afflict a series of communities in feudal Japan. It is just beautifully drawn. It is a story which is instantly recognizable, but told in a way that you're going to think that you've never seen before. The demons are quite incredible. There are these kind of squirmy, wormy things which are just terrifying. When it came out, I remember taking my kids to see it, and they were just mesmerized by it because it is so beautiful. There are these wonderful little forest spirits that you meet with the little white kind of clicking heads, which you could just hear everyone going, oh! But also moments of terror because they show battles going on, and underlying, as often as the case with Miyazaki, there is a message, and that is about protection of the environment. It just carries you away.
But one of the things I love about Miyazaki is that his messages They don't clobber you over the head like I feel a lot of Hollywood films do, where it's about the environment, but there's a lot of ambiguity. There isn't anybody who's all good or all bad, and good characters can kind of act in strange ways. He puts a lot, he assumes that kids can handle that ambiguity, and they really can. They really love it. I always think one of my favorite characters of all time is from a Miyazaki film, and it's called the movie Swept Away. And Spirited Away is a completely different film that you should not show your children. Holy buckets, no, that would not be good. Spirited Away, and his name, he's got no face, and he is just kind of an id. He just wants to do have some fun and eat everything, and he damages the castle.
Perfect for Thanksgiving.
But then he's just misunderstood. He's kind of like a kid, and I love that he can be a force for good or a force for bad. He's just a great character. Miyazaki's such a genius, and I think Princess Mononoke is a wonderful film that can play across the generations. I do think, though, for people should... There are Miyazaki films like Totoro that can play for really young kids.
Yes, yes.
And Princess Mononoke is a little bit more sophisticated. But that's great because then even like preteens and teenagers will be completely involved in it.
Then, of course, my real favorite is Porco Rosso, which is a little romantic film that he made about World War One flying ace who... for reasons that are never actually really explained, is turned into a pig. And he sits in this beautiful lagoon with his flying plane ready to... and there's nothing there except for a deck chair and a phone. And he's ready to leap into action at any point when he is needed. And it's just this wonderful, romantic little piece. We've got a lot of people on the phone already wanting to talk about their favorites. Andrew is calling in from Grand Forks. What is your suggestion for a great family viewing at Thanksgiving?
Well, I can only speak from my personal experience, but A League of Their Own. My entire family are big baseball fans, and though we can't agree on many films together, though the Cubs recently winning, it's probably going to get us in that mood to talk about it when we all reunite. And we'll probably be talking that movie. I mean, even I was the youngest child, and even as a little kid, I was told to not be like Stuart Angel. I would be punished as severely as he was, or more.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, is this a thing that you have sat down with your family to watch regularly?
Oh, yeah. It's every time, every chance we really do get when there's, and we just all want to feel really good. And we love the idea of the period piece as well. It's got really fun characters, really good message, and I think it's good for anyone, really.
It's really got an incredible cast, too. You've got Gina Davis, you've got Rosie O'Donnell, you've got Madonna.
Oh, I forgot about Madonna.
Yeah.
And of course, Tom Hanks.
And of course, Tom Hanks. How could we forget Tom Hanks? Anyway, well, thank you. Thank you very much for calling.
That's a great suggestion. Heather at nprnews.org/live says, Up always plays well, and she's right. The great thing I love about Up is that opening 10 minutes where they tell the story of the couple and the adults are all crying and the kids are like, why are you crying? I don't understand. And Marjorie says, this movie came to mind, The Prophet. She says the full title is Khalil Gibran's The Prophet. And she says it's a 2014 animated film adapted from the book, The Prophet, produced by Selma Hayek. And I haven't seen that. Have you?
It actually, I have a copy of it. I've not watched it yet. It was circulating in movie theaters actually quite recently.
Well, Marjorie does look gorgeous. Suggests that.
Yeah. Let's go to, speaking of animation, let's go to Anne from Lutzen, who's mentioning something that is happening next weekend in theaters.
Hi, Anne.
Hi there. I'm a big claymation fan.
I love claymation.
I'm coming to the cities for Thanksgiving with my chosen family, and we're going to go see Claymation Classics at the Walker. It's playing Saturday and Sunday, and it's billed as a family-friendly event. It looks wonderful.
Now, this is the Wallace and Gromit?
Some of that, yep. It's a bunch of different short films.
Yeah, and I think they're also showing Shaun the Sheep. It does sound like, I mean...
And I can tell you, if you have never seen Shaun the Sheep, It is a crowd pleaser across the generations. It's basically it's a tribute to silent film in a way, because Shaun and the Sheep do not speak. And I can tell you, my father is in his 70s. My son is 8. And the two of them love sitting down and watching Shaun the Sheep together, and have for years now. Definitely plays across the generations.
And one of the other films they're showing is The Wrong Trousers, the classic Wallace and Gromit
I love that.
Film, which is just, it shows you the real dangers of having the wrong trousers. And let's not say any more than that. So
thanks for calling in,
thank
Anne.
You very much. We have David in St. Cloud, who wants to continue Miyazaki.
All right. Hey, David.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to talk about?
Yeah, so you guys were talking about Miyazaki films, Studio Ghibli films, and my personal favorite is Howl's Moving Castle.
Oh, I love Howl's Moving Castle. Why do you like it?
Well, a lot of the same reasons you guys were talking about the other movies. It's beautifully done, both in artistry and the actual movie itself. It really takes you away. But also, I just, as you were talking about claymation, I thought of a second movie. My fiance and I just watched Kubo and the Two Strings.
Ah.
Oh, close to my heart, David.
That one blew me away. Not to sound too pessimistic, but I didn't know what to expect going into it. But it was another just beautiful movie to watch. I'd recommend it.
And that is just coming out on DVD now.
Next week it'll be on DVD, but you can already get it on iTunes and, you know, purchase it for rental for like $15. And it still might be playing at some theaters around.
Yeah.
And I cannot say enough good things about Kubo and the Two Strings. This is from the group that did the Box Trolls, and it's
one of my favorites.
One of your favorites, it's true. And if you think that, if you're kind of tired of like, oh, it's a princess with a little animal, this is a completely creative, brand new story about a little boy named Kubo. It's set in Japan, and he has a mysterious past. He lives with his mother in a cave, and his mother won't let him out after dark because she says, your grandfather will try to steal your eye. And it is a really, it's great animation, a really good script, beautiful music, and a wonderful story. And it's a good blend of scares and humor and heart. It's a classic. It's a new classic, and everyone should see it. And thank you. I'm glad that David called in to say that, so I can talk about one of my favorite movies of the year, Kubo and the Two Strings.
You are listening to an hour of Cube Critics, you lucky, lucky people.
You are.
And I'm Ewan Karras. That's Stephanie Curtis over there. And we are wanting to hear your suggestions for family viewing, for family movie traditions over Thanksgiving. You can call now at 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Or, of course, there's the blog, nprnews.org/live.
Yes, I would like to recommend a movie now, since you got to do Princess Mononoke. I think, now this is one that is not for little kids. This is something that's better for teens and adults, but particularly for grown siblings, I think. Spike Lee's Crooklyn. This is a movie that Spike Lee made in the 90s, and he worked on it with his siblings. And it's about memories of growing up in the 70s and all the hijinks they were up to. They grew up in Brooklyn, and their parents were trying to keep them on the straight and narrow and keep them from watching too much of the idiot box, as his mother calls it in the movie. And this, I want to play a scene really quick. This is a scene, try to picture this. It's five little kids on a bed. One of them just brought home some candy from the corner store, and they are all arguing as siblings do, but something brings them together, and it's the TV. Let's listen.
You please twitch your mouth closed?
Yeah. Don't start with me, shoot.
I don't need you to fight my battle, fool.
Elias, the good point.
Let's watch the next.
And that's them joyously singing to the Partridge Family, the show that could bring all of America together in the 70s. It's got a great soundtrack. And it's just these little vignettes of memories that the Lee family had. And I think it would be a great movie to watch, one, because it's really funny, and two, it could bring out memories that you and your siblings have about what you did growing up, the dumb TV shows you used to watch. And there's a there are wonderful insults that the siblings use for each other. One of them calls his seven-year-old sister like a flat-chested freak or something like that. And so I think it would be a great movie for you to watch with grown-ups or teenagers. And that's Spike Lee's Crooklyn.
Always good to give people ammunition for insults. We have more people on the phone. Josh is calling in from River Falls. You have a suggestion.
Yes, I do. It has actually been a family tradition for us since our kids were probably middle school age, maybe. There's a movie, Home for the Holidays, directed by Jodie Foster from the mid-90s with just a phenomenal ensemble cast featuring Holly Hunter and just frenetic, hysterical Robert Downey Jr. Geraldine Chaplin is in it. And just wonderful. And it takes place over the course of Thanksgiving holiday. Arguably, levels of dysfunction are exhibited really funny. So really love that one.
It's always fun to watch other people's dysfunction, isn't it?
So. It is. And it gives you a chance to talk about your own family dysfunctions then. It's a great recommendation.
We also have Morgan on the line from St. Paul. And you have a beloved film.
Yes, it's a classic in my opinion. The Princess Bride. The amount of quotable scenes in that movie is up to standards with The Big Lebowski. So I just think it's a fabulous movie.
I was just thinking immediately you said that at least three or four quotes came into my head. It's just a marvelous, marvelous film.
It is marriage. And I also like My Name is Inigo Montoya, Prepare to Die.
Yeah. You killed my father.
You killed my father. I don't think you understand what that means. Yeah. And Sarah also recommends The Princess Bride. She says it's a family favorite from kids to grandparents. These are people who weighed in at mprnews.org/live. Joe says every year we watch Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. It's such an entertaining yet profound film on what's most important in life. Similar artistic vein as Forrest Gump, in my opinion. And Mary says, every Thanksgiving when I'm making a turkey, I watch Tootsie. I love that.
Fair enough.
It's a classic, one of the funniest movies ever made.
Can I talk a little about the family tradition that we had for a while?
Sure.
We used to have a family film festival where, I mean, this worked better when the kids were still at home, but everyone in the family would select a movie, and then I would go out and find the DVD or whatever, and then we would sit down. It usually was over a longer holiday, and everyone would show their movie and then talk a little about why they chose it. And one of the movies, which actually was a big success, we have a clip from it, and that is Man on Wire, which is a documentary about the bizarre story of, Michel Petit, who mm-hmm. decided that the World Trade Tower was being built for him specifically so he could secretly creep up and put a wire between the two towers and then walk on it. So we have a little clip of people talking about the day they actually managed to do it.
And he said, the police are going to dislodge you and you should stop. And I was madly enraged by that, but also it saved my life.
There is somebody out there in a tightrope walk between the two towers of the World Trade Center, right at the tippy top.
I personally figured I was watching something that somebody else would never see again in the world. Thought it was once in a lifetime.
There was actually recently a feature film based on the same story released this year.
Was it last year? Yeah, it was last year. Came and
already,
went.
Yeah.
Disappeared.
But I would recommend checking this one out. Our entire family sat mesmerized.
And I think the great thing about it is, one, it's spectacular because they actually have footage of the events here, watching people. There's not only memories of people saying, oh, yeah, I remember seeing that. They've got footage of people watching it at that time. And it's also a great thing to talk about because he's such a madman, and yet he did this beautiful, really imaginative and just fantastic thing. And it's fun to see what kids would think about it. It's fun to see what grandparents would think about it. And it would be fun to see if your family remembered when it happened to family members.
Yeah. We should break for the news.
But let's give out the phone numbers real quick. You can call, and I'm going to give them out correctly this time, okay?
Okay.
651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. We want to hear about your family film traditions and movies that you think play well across the generations, whether they're old movies or comedies or movies about holidays. Give us a call or go to mprnews.org/live.
Let's go to John Wanamaker. What's the latest news?
UN President-elect Donald Trump is offering the post of Attorney General to Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions. That's according to a senior Trump official who was not authorized to speak publicly about the conversation. The official today would not say whether Sessions had accepted the job. Sessions was the first senator to endorse Trump and was a close advisor throughout the campaign. Racial comments dogged the Alabama Republican during a Senate confirmation hearing when he was nominated for a federal judgeship in 1986. He later withdrew. Mike Pompeo, a Kansas congressman, is Trump's choice to be CIA director. Pompeo is a conservative Republican and a fierce critic of President Obama's nuclear deal with Iran. Trump has also chosen retired general, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn to be national security advisor. Federal officials have outlined new steps Flint must take before switching its drinking water source again in the wake of its lead contamination crisis. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency today updated an order issued in January. It calls for Flint to build a 3-mile-long interconnection so it can test water from a new authority for 3 months while continuing to provide water from Detroit's system. EPA officials say Flint must also submit a new water treatment plan. The city switched from Detroit water to the Flint River in 2014 to save money. However, corrosive water caused lead to leach from aging pipes into home drinking water. Right now in Wall Street, stocks are slightly lower as investors look over a mixed bag of earnings from retailers. Right now, the Dow off 0.2%, the NASDAQ off 0.25%, the S&P 500 also off 0.25%. Target stock is down slightly as well. This is Minnesota Public Radio News.
For nearly 50 years, Minnesota Public Radio has enriched minds, nourished spirits, and strengthened communities. You can be a part of this and make a lasting impact by including NPR as part of your will or retirement plan. Learn more at npr.org/legacy.
I'm Tom Weber. Next hour on NPR News, a recap of this week's ISIS sentencings. Reporter Laura Ewan will join me for that. Then a look at the future of the sex offender laws and programs here in Minnesota as the man who kidnapped, sexually assaulted, and killed Jacob Wetterling comes in for sentencing on Monday. I hope you'll join us at 11.
Programming supported by Sue McLean and Associates, presenting Snap Judgment live at the State Theater December 8th. With audiences nationwide, Snap Judgment is a storytelling phenomenon created by Glenn Washington that delivers a raw, musical brand of narrative. Tickets at SueMcLean.com.
I'd seen the grill and ended up buying it. And I opened the grill up, and there's a foot, you know, 5 toes and 5 toenails. I decided to keep it.
The Smoker Grill is now a tourist attraction.
I can't believe. I mean, who is this guy? That's Malik.
He lost his leg 3 years ago, and that's just one hurdle life has thrown at him.
I've been shot, run over by a state dump truck, electrocuted. I've been through a lot.
An unbelievable character, isn't he?
A gentleman told me today I was a household name in Hollywood, California.
Everybody around here knows him as a footman.
Some folks just call me Foot for short.
It is a freak show, no question.
It's a funny story, but it's born of tragedy.
There it is, Finders Keepers, one of the most bizarre documentaries which has come out in recent years, and also moving and deeply interested in the idea of fame and fortune in modern America.
I think you need to explain what it's about, Ewan, because I don't think that clip really does it justice.
One day, one of the gentlemen who we just heard from went to a rummage sale. Actually, it was a storage unit was being cleared out because the guy hadn't paid for his rent. And he bought himself a grill, a smoker, and came home and found a mummified human leg. And the story is about the very public wrestling match that went on for the next decade over who actually owned the leg, the guy who'd found it or the guy who had inadvertently misplaced it. It was his own leg. It's kind of icky, but it's just you can't look away. It's fascinating.
The thing that I loved about it is when I started watching it, I thought, where's this going to go? I mean, it's really funny. This is really great, but there's only 10 minutes of material here. And then it keeps unspooling and getting deeper and more interesting. And I've hadn't laughed so hard in quite a while when I saw that film. And it also made me tearful.
Yeah.
Just great movie.
It's eminently relatable. Yeah. And it's, and I think actually, maybe not for the youngest of kids, but this, it raises a lot of questions. And this would be great for talking about afterwards. So
teenagers, definitely. Let me read a couple of comments from this before we go to the calls. World's Fastest Indian is recommended by Josh, starring Anthony Hopkins. He says it's an incredible true story with lessons and laughs for everyone. I totally agree with that. And Jen, I love this. Not every movie that we recommend here as a family favorite is going to be necessarily an Oscar nominee.
That's true.
Jen is recommending, or says her family watches, Son-in-Law. This is from 1993. What's his name? Pauly Shore. Yes, Pauly Shore is not his name.
Remember
she
him?
Says, it's a no-brainer full of funny quotes that last the day. She says, oh my God, it's Bartles or James. Dude, which one are you? Apparently it's one of the quotes. I love that idea that her family likes watching Son-in-Law together. That's fantastic. A great recommendation. That's Son-in-Law. And we should say again that the movie was, did we say again, Finders Keepers?
Finders Keepers, yes.
Because people get angry at us if we do not repeat the title.
Okay.
All right.
We have a lot of people on the line. Jim is calling in from Minneapolis. You have a recommendation for us.
I do indeed. It's a School of Rock with Jack Black, Joan Cusack, Sarah Silverman, and a great cast of kids.
I was just wondering about this because my son is really into the musical, and I was wondering how young you think kids could be to watch it.
Oh, we watched it with our 9-year-old and our 12-year-old. I think it's totally suitable for them.
Great.
The 12-year-old actually just saw the musical on Broadway and is now obsessed with that. The movie is also perfectly suitable. You know, it's kind of like a modern-day Mary Poppins with the quirky adults bringing out the best they can be in this troupe of ragtag kids, and it's tremendous fun and, of course, hilarious for adults, too.
Great. Thanks very much for calling in,
Jim. I love that,
Jim.
I'm going to watch that tonight with my 8-year-old, my 11-year-old.
We have Anne-Marie is calling in from Chanhassen. You have a slightly different film to suggest.
Yes, I do. Thank you. I love Danny Boyle, very eclectic producer of films. Mm-hmm. And Millions was a small-run film, originally kind of a word of mouth. I heard about it at Blockbuster. It's so old. It's about a family in England coping with the death of their mom and kind of the family dynamics of this youngest boy who is firm in his hope and belief that his mom lives on. And it's just a great comedy uplifting at the end.
Wonderful, wonderful. And you're right, so eclectic. He's done so many things. And this is not for the entire family, but if you haven't had a chance to see the trailer for the new Trainspotting movie, which he is directing, it's, I don't know, maybe I'm just excited about it.
You are very excited about it. No one should watch Trainspotting with their family at any point, Ewan. Don't even put it in someone's brain. They'll
yes.
think, what was that Ewan recommended? I think he said Trainspotting at some point.
Yes.
Let's make sure no one does that.
Yeah, the Scottish Tourist Board loves it. Anyway,
Sybil
right.
Sybil recommends Lars and the Real Girl, and Marjorie says a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving for a 30-minute treat. And she says, OMG, Kubo and the Two Strings is so wonderful. So it's a big love fest for Kubo and the Two Strings today.
We have Matthew calling in from New Prague. Matthew, what should we watch?
One of my favorite movies to watch over Thanksgiving is the movie Rudy. Rudy is a film. It's family oriented. It's about a father accepting his son, and of course, there's a lot of football involved.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a great movie, and it shows how perseverance can achieve goals in life.
Wonderful. So, do you actually you do watch it every Thanksgiving, or?
I do watch it. My nickname in high school was actually Rudy, so that was kind of the reason I started liking it as well.
Wonderful, wonderful.
I love Rudy, and I'm a sucker for sports movies like that. But like, remember the Titans, the the underdog team coming from behind. And I think that's a great movie. And, of course, Hoosiers.
Indeed. Indeed. We have Evan calling in from St. Anthony. Again, a slightly different suggestion.
Yeah, it's definitely slightly different. Me and my dad used to make kind of holiday events out of watching those sci-fi movies. And one of our favorite one was Sabretooth. And there was this hilarious scene in it where one of the ladies says, "Oh, for all I know, it could be right behind me." And this terribly CGI'd Sabretooth comes out and kills her. And we laugh at these. And then we started on the Sharknado series. And the fourth Sharknado, from the hundreds of cameos and the really funny references, they're really great movies.
Well, thank you. I must admit, I tried to watch a Sharknado and I couldn't get very far, but maybe I'm just not committed enough.
Were you watching it alone? I think that Sharknado is something that needs to be watched together. It's something that brings America together. It is not a solo event, nor would I recommend just you and your wife. It seems like something that your children should be involved in, too.
Yes, yes. For people who aren't familiar with Sharknado, this is, of course, the totally believable idea that sharks get picked up by a huge storm and dropped in the middle of cities.
And wreak havoc.
Yes, anyway.
I love that idea. All right, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. We've talked about a lot of movies from the past. I think the oldest thing we've mentioned is probably Tootsie from, 1980?
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about something a little bit older, and this is The Adventures of Robin Hood. If you wanted to introduce your kids to classic cinema, this is something the entire family can get behind. This is the Errol Flynn film, and it is a wonderful swashbuckling adventure. And I have a clip here of it from it. Let's play the clip, but keep in mind that the best thing about it is Errol Flynn running around with a sword and not only the wordplay. But here, let's listen to a clip.
So you think you're overtaxed, eh?
Overtaxed, overworked, and paid off with a knife, a club, or a rope.
Why, you speak treason.
Fluently.
I advise you to curb that wagging tongue of yours.
It's a habit I've never formed, Your Grace. You know, we Saxons aren't going to put up with these oppressions much longer.
Go Robin Hood. We Saxons aren't going to put up with this oppression much longer. It is romantic and funny, and kids love it. It looks great. It still looks great these days. It's not a film their kids are going to look at and think, "Oh, that looks so old-fashioned." It doesn't. It looks fantastic. I highly recommend it.
Incredible sword fights. Yeah, up and down those staircases.
Yeah. It's mind-bogglingly cool. So if you want to have something that the whole family can enjoy, The Adventures of Robin Hood plays across the generations easily.
We have Pat, who is calling in from Sioux Falls, talking about classics. Pat, what is your recommendation?
Well, our family has always enjoyed Dr. Zhivago, a wonderful movie. Mm-hmm. Julie Christie, Omar Sharif. And, of course, you know, it's snowing, so...
Of course, that makes sense. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
And Geraldine Chaplin.
The other thing we might do at Christmas is watch our way through the Lord of the Rings series.
Mm.
Wow, yes.
That is a great idea. And in fact, if you are in the Twin Cities, the Riverview plays them all in a row, so you can make an entire day of it and see it on the big screen, which is a wonderful way to see those films. They're so... epic that those scenes from in New Zealand are gorgeous on a big screen.
Speaking of live events, I should briefly mention that if you want a different kind of experience, the Minnesota Orchestra is playing live to Pixar's Ratatouille on the 26th and the 27th, which is, if you've never had the experience of seeing a wonderful orchestra playing along live, it's amazing. I saw the Battleship Potemkin a few years ago. It's mind-blowing.
Oh, that's
very
cool.
Very good.
I saw that Marty called, and Marty's not there anymore, but wanted to mention a movie that I really love that I don't think enough people have seen, and that is a John Cusack movie from quite a long time ago called The Journey of Natty Gann, and it's about a young girl in Depression-era America trying to make her way by train with a dog and John Cusack in tow, and it's a charming, family-friendly film, and not enough people have seen it, and it is something that you can watch with grandparents and teenagers, and everyone would have a good time. The Journey of Natty Gann. I completely agree. with that recommendation.
We should quickly go to Dan, who's calling in from Lakeville. Hi, Dan. What's your recommendation?
Hey, my recommendation would be kind of an old classic. I think it is classic. It's a Christmas Carol, Scrooge. It's a musical with Albert Finney in it. Filmed quite a long time ago, but it's one that we and my family watch year over year. I watched it as a kid with my family as well. And just one that talks about, you know, the change that goes through for Scrooge. And it's got wonderful music and characters. But I also think just watching the change, a reminder that everyone can become a better person, especially at this time of year. It's just a good thing, especially as you head into the new year.
Great, so thank you.
That's the way we kick off our Thanksgiving every year.
Good, good. Thank you.
Heather has another inspirational movie. She recommends Auntie Mame, the one with Rosalind Russell. And she has a quote here. Life is a banquet and most poor suckers are starving to death. You've got to live. I love Auntie Mame. Thanks, Heather.
Well, whatever you watch this Thanksgiving, I hope you have a whole lot of fun. And, you know, we'd love to hear about it. It's just a marvelous, marvelous time. And enjoy your movies. One of the movies that is out there at the moment, a must-see indie movie of the moment, is Moonlight. It's a coming-of-age tale about an African-American boy growing up in a tough part of Miami. The movie has been drawing critical and audience applause around the country and around the world. The film was written and directed by Barry Jenkins, based on a story by playwright Terrell Alvin McCraney. Both of them grew up in the neighborhood shown in the film. I chatted with Jenkins recently about the movie just days after it won the Best Film Honors at the Twin Cities Film Festival. He told me he was attracted to McCraney's story for a couple of reasons.
Part of it was, I just hadn't seen anybody tell the story of this neighborhood that Terrell and I are from, Liberty City, which is kind of like the South Side Chicago, Compton, L.A., kind of Miami. And he did it in a way that was really, really visceral, you know? Anybody who grew up there, you know, you could see that he had done the work to sort of get it right. The other part of it was, you know, my mom went through this struggle with addiction, also vividly depicted by Naomi Harris in the film, and I hadn't seen that told either. And that's where I really saw myself. In this very authentic sort of way, and I just thought I don't know. There was just it just felt really personal, despite the fact that it didn't originate with me. And as a filmmaker, that's the Holy Grail.
We here in the Twin Cities have seen a lot of Terrell's work. His several of his plays have been done at local theaters, and it kind of surprised me that he then gave you the story and you wrote the screenplay. And take me through how that happened.
Yeah, originally, when the piece came to me, and the source material was called In Moonlight, Black Boys Look Blue. Beautiful title, but too many words to fit on a poster. I didn't know who Terrell was. I'd never heard of him. I didn't realize he was the celebrated playwright. But once I found out, you know, my idea was for Terrell to make the adaptation himself, you know, with guidance from me. And so, you know, we exchanged a lot of notes. And he became a MacArthur genius, and once he did, he was just too busy to actually do the writing. But this beautiful thing had happened where, you know, we had exchanged so many ideas, and I'd been very clear about what my intentions were, you know, for the piece, that he knew what I was going to do. And so he just sort of gave me the green light. You know, he trusted me to go off, you know, and take authorship of the piece.
May we all become geniuses and be too busy. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
So as you got to that point, what was it that you really wanted to do with this? I mean, you've got this story, this place that you want to talk about, but were there larger aims?
Yeah, there were. You know, I kind of loved... I love that Terrell had taken the same character and created three different people, essentially, you know? Basically, it was like a day in the life, but it was like, of course, because it's Terrell, you know, it wasn't your typical day in the life, you know? You would see little wake up, the young boy, then you would see the teenager wake up, then you would see the adult wake up. And you would see the little boy go to school, you would see the teenager go to school, you would see the adult go to the drug spot. You know, he was progressing each of them through their days, sort of like together. You know, he described it as a circular structure. And what I saw in it was, oh my goodness, this is how different a person can be, you know, if they respond to the way the world is attempting to shape them in these different ways. And so I love the idea that in telling this story, once we pulled it apart, you know, as first chapter, he's a child. Second chapter, he's a teenager. Third chapter, he's an adult. He's the same character, but he's been shaped into a different person. I just thought that was a really rich thing to undertake, especially now we live, you know, in current American society where so many things are being projected on. This is American. This is not American. You know, this is masculine. This is not masculine. You know, I just thought it was a great opportunity to speak to those things in a way that wasn't preaching, you know, and wasn't sort of like think piecey. You know, it was like lived flesh and blood from this place that I knew very well.
My guest today is Barry Jenkins, the writer and director of the new movie Moonlight. You have three actors who put in just amazing performances through these three chapters, but this must have been a challenge for you as a director.
It was a challenge, but it was a challenge that we all willingly took on. You know, even at the script stage, you know, we sort of knew that we were going to cast different actors to play the same character. Again, the movie's inherently intersectional, you know. It's about all these different things, you know, Sharon is black, he's male, he's poor, he's gay, it's just all this stuff this kid is dealing with. And it was written to the script in such a way that there was no doubt that the character was a different person. And so I wanted to cast different people to play the same person. And I did certain things to preserve that, you know. One, we didn't allow the actors who play Chiron, you know, Ashton Sanders, Travante Rose, and Alex Everett, we didn't allow them to meet. They didn't rehearse together. They didn't get to watch each other's footage, you know. Again, I wanted to make a very definitive statement that the world is shaping these young men into different people. You know, one of the things that I think people are seeing in the film is how the world is shaping them, you know, and how we don't always get to see ourselves, you know, at these three different stages at once, you know, or housed in one narrative. And what we ended up sort of fixating on was this idea that, you know, in cinema, the eyes are the window into the soul. This is a theory put forth by Walter Murch, you know, who's Francis Ford Coppola's editor and sound designer. And he wrote this book called In the Blink of an Eye. And he said, you know, when the audience is in a movie theater watching a film, when they look into the actor's eyes, they're seeing the soul of the character. And I thought, if we can just find these three actors, these three young men with the same eyes, you know, we will have this soul that is carried forth across the three chapters of the film. And when Travante Rhodes walked into the audition, you know, he's this guy with all these muscles. I mean, it's jarring to see him appear on screen, just like it was jarring for me in the audition room when he walked in. I was like, this dude is ridiculous. I don't know why he's here. And yet he starts reading, and I can just see the sensitivity in his eyes. I start to see that little boy in his eyes. And so, you know, we use the challenge to our advantage, you know, because I wanted the audience to do the same thing, to judge this guy when they first see him, and then realize, oh, no, you know, that same little boy's soul, you know, is encased in this body.
Barry Jenkins is our guest today. He is the writer and the director of Moonlight. You have characters, and forgive me for using this term, but they're kind of stock characters in a way. But you take each one and throw it on its head. You go deep into the psyche of the addicted mother, into the drug dealer, and really open up this world.
You know, it wasn't an intention of ours. It wasn't a goal to subvert stereotypes or cliches. You know, the thing is, you know, you watch a film about, you know, some seasoned, grayed and grizzled coach, you know. You know, that doesn't mean that everybody who has a family member who's a coach, you know, has someone who's like that grizzled person you see, you know, in some television show or movie. You know, my mom was a crack addict, you know, and she's nothing like the crack addicts that I've seen depicted, you know, in some of these stereotypical depictions of what a crack addict looks like. So I didn't draw her from the depictions of crack addicts that I've seen presented to me in arts and letters. I drew her from my personal experience of living with someone who went through that process. The same thing with the character Juan, played by Mahershala Ali. You know, the whole source material for Terrell originated because he wanted to tell the story of this local drug dealer who took him under his wings when he was a child and when he was othered in the neighborhood that we grew up in. So, you know, I think stereotypes, they arise from without and not from within, you know. And so for us, drawing these characters, and this was just our version of the people we knew, you know, and not us attempting to take something from outside. You know, I'm going to make a movie about a drug dealer, but not that kind of drug dealer. It's like, no, I'm going to make a movie about Juan, you know, was always the point.
So the movie came out and has just, it's been drawing raves from all around. I saw people in tears in the theater.
Oh, I love it. Give me the tears. Give me the tears, bruh. Give me the tears, bruh.
But obviously, you knew you had something special when you did this, but this must be kind of overwhelming what's coming at you now.
It's been the most pleasant surprise, I would say. You know, I never expect anything I make to get much farther than, you know, my friends and family. But it's been wonderful to, I mean, I've been all over the world with this film. I've been to, you know, London, Telluride, Toronto, you know, Rome, you know, New York. And everywhere we go with this film, people are seeing themselves in the piece. And I've tried to, over the last few weeks, understand why that is, because the movie's made for an audience of two. You know, it's about getting it right for myself and for Terrell. You know, we're two black boys from a very particular neighborhood at a very particular time with moms and went through a very particular ordeal with crack cocaine addiction. But I think in that, you know, people have been saying, you know, it's universal because it's specific, you know. But I get that, but I don't think the film is relatable to everybody because it's relatable to myself and Terrell. It's like, oh no, because Terrell and I can see ourselves in the film, there's some guy or girl or man or woman who can see themselves in the film. And it's not about it being for everyone, it's about it being for me. It's, I think, what the audience is seeing in the film. That's so wonderful. I will say, I was damn glad to talk to you cats. Because you guys are not on the Pacific Ocean or the Atlantic Ocean. You guys are very much in between. And it heartens me to hear you say that even people as far away, you know, as the Twin Cities, you know, I'm from Miami. This is a movie about a boy from Miami. You can't get much farther away and stay in the States than Miami to Minneapolis. And yet you said people were in tears. And so I'm really excited for the film to continue to get away from the coast. And to get into this place where people, again, can go, oh, I'm not from Miami, you know, but I know what it's like to live in that tower in the center of Minneapolis, you know, and feel like this tower is the only home that I know. And there are stories within this tower that nobody's told, you know, and maybe now I'll have the confidence to tell them, or I'll see that I'm not so alone, and that this story isn't, you know, just, that doesn't just belong to me, you know. That it can be shared with others. So I'm stoked, man, and I hope the train keeps rolling. By which I mean, I hope people keep seeing themselves in the film.
That was Barry Jenkins, who wrote and directed Moonlight,
and he also wrote and directed Medicine for Melancholy. Oh, he didn't write Moonlight, did he? I thought it was based on a play.
No, he wrote.
Oh, you're the one that did the work on it.
Yes,
I don't know why I'm contradicting you on the air.
Yeah.
I'm a very bad colleague here. But he did write and direct Medicine for Melancholy, which is a great little movie, and it's available streaming if you wanted something like Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, about a couple out strolling and spending 24 hours together. Very lovely.
That's it. You've been listening to The Cube Critics for the last hour, and thank you for everyone who called in.
Yeah.
We have a little bit of music here,
oh, yay.
Stephanie. What is this?
This is a song from Moana. It is Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote it, and he's singing on it, and it is fantastic, and you've got to just listen to it. I love it. Moana opens next week.
Remember to listen in to our podcast, and we will be back next month with the best movies of the year. Thanks for listening. Na eko hakin.